Well, now, well, it can seem that pop culture, almost three decades ago, was all about bad perms, neon, and saccharine pop songs. On a deeper level, this was also profoundly transformative, a decade for the arts. The AIDS crisis brought about a foreboding feeling of the end of times, while feminism raptured tradition, and it opened possibilities for new relationships between genders. Punk music, or graffiti as art, and the urban underground art scene flourished. Vision, sound revisited. Allentown's 80s art scene revisited. Explores and celebrates downtown Allentown's alternative cultural scene and gives a deeper look at the fears, desires, and joyously creative energy that pulsed throughout this revolution in downtown artists' lofts and on the airways. The years 1978 to 1988 ushered in a new era of postmodern ideas, anti-conformity, and a bold experimentation across a variety of spectrums, in the visual arts, on the radio airways, in lifestyles, in the theatrical counterculture. It should come as no surprise that these hip-happening artists came of age when the Lehigh Valley needed them most. This is WDIY 88.1 Allentown, and you are tuned in to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host Kate Scuffle, we chat today with creators, curators, and organizers Cheryl Hockney and Lisa Boss. What a powerful memories you've collected to share with all of us. We thank you.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
It's and speaking of powerful memories, we were just talking a little bit before the program my own memories of that moment in downtown Allentown, but that we kind of came into it at the tail end. Lisa, you said you had come from New York, though. You'd been in New York, you'd seen what was going on in kind of the urban or downtown art scene, and you were really impressed with what you found when you came to Allentown back then.
Yeah, I was. I was listening to the radio in my mother's kitchen, and I heard all of these great sounds as I was writing my college paper in Long Swamp, and I was like, wow, what's going on in Allentown? This is some great stuff, a lot of what I had seen and heard in New York. And I called Ed Grossman, who was doing a Brazilian show, and I said, fabulous. And he said, come on over and do a show with me. And I'm like, okay, great, I will. And one thing led to another, and I became a radio programmer, and I met Cheryl and John Lott and a million other people that are in the show, of course, and who were tremendously creative and exciting, and it definitely rivaled the scene that I saw and was a part of in New York City. It was fabulous. It was great to have so much fun and creativity back home.
That's fascinating. Cheryl, would you say, I mean, it feels like WMUH was in many ways not only an echo and a mirror of what was going on, but in many ways the voice of what was going on?
Exactly. WMUH's community radio programming staff really started off in 1981. And one of the things, Neil Heaver, who was a student programmer there and was keeping the station on the air in the summer, one of the things we set out to do was to find people that we could train for broadcasting that were into types of music, spoken word, radio theater, news and public affairs that weren't being represented elsewhere on the dial. And it became very easy to train people. You no longer had to go to a federal building and take a three-part FCC test. You filled out a little postcard, and as long as you were a U.S. citizen and hadn't been convicted of a felony, you paid $5, mailed your card. You actually had a temporary card, and it was up to the radio station to train you to do broadcasting. I remember I hitchhiked to Boston because I was in Worcester, Massachusetts doing radio in order to take my test. So nobody had to hitchhike anywhere. It just was the cost of postage and filling out the card. So the first person I recruited was Dave Fry, because Dave Fry, proprietor of Godfrey Daniels here on Southside Bethlehem, Dave had done a folk show on AM 1470 WSAN, and I knew Dave had a license. And then I began just starting with people that I knew through my husband, John Lott, the painter, eventually recruiting him, Pamela Fearing, who was Pamela before she was Pamela, Gary Hassey's wife, to do a program called Fear of Jazz. And then that led to Todd Whitman doing it. It just snowballed. So we had everything from folk, whatever. But in addition to that, we were the mouthpiece for what was going on downtown. We were the way things got promoted. As Lisa often says, there wasn't any internet then. There wasn't Facebook.
Right.
I mean, this was it. You basically had print posters, well, that was print, mm-hmm. and the airwaves. Mm-hmm. So whenever anything exciting was going on downtown or in the surrounding area that was kind of avant-garde-ish or artsy that wasn't going to get the attention we would have liked it to have in mainstream media, MUH and its programmers became the mouthpiece.
And it's interesting. I mean, I'd like to, we need to get back for our audience to talking, too, about what's going on as part of Vision Sound, the visual arts, the bands, the concerts. But part of that programming is actually a collection and a curation of these of the posters. The posters were art. Mm-hmm. Posters were created by the artists on the scene. They were extraordinary in and of themselves. I mean, everything that kind of flowed through the scene had this really DIY, wonderful communal rethinking, this energy. And so... Tell us a little bit about how 20, 30 some years later you two decide to revisit and make share this with us all again. What was the spark for this?
Cheryl and I rekindled our friendship and we were walking to 19th Street to see some movies and, you know, rekindling, you know, memories and talking about our youth. And I said, you know, we really should do a show. We should organize all of our friends' art and get some music and show people how really creative it was because our memories were fabulous. And while we still had them, we wanted to show them and share them with people. And you're right. The radio was the social media of the day. People yeah. paid attention to the radio and listened to it for not only the amazing quality of sound that it offered, but to find out what was going on, who, what, where, when, why. It was a fabulous nexus for artists, musicians, the theater, poetry. It was a great focuser of talent, and we had control of the airwaves. We were controlling the media really in a way. So we had the voice. The voice was young and it was fresh and new. And
it's a component of the show now, right? I mean, we can actually go and hear WMUH again.
Right. Yes. When Lisa and I were hatching this, as you alluded to, Kate, and Lisa's very eloquently explained, the audio had to be a part of it. And my concern was, okay, well, how do you do that? You know, how are we going to execute that? So I went to Neil Heaver and said, do you know anyone who could help us? Knowing that Neil is fabulously busy here. And he said, why don't I put you in touch with sound sculptor Scott Shirk, who at the time was a sculptor in the Department of Art at Muhlenberg College. So Lisa and I met with Scott and explained what we had in mind with audio, and Scott assured me, mostly me, that we could actually do this. So we made it part of our presentation at the Baum School. Scott, in turn, got us in touch with Paul Nicholson at the Martin Art Gallery at Muhlenberg College Center for the Arts, and that's how the show now has more than one venue. But you'll hear 17 bands I collected audio from, some from different people's archives, some from Neil Heaver's personal archives, but mostly self-contributed, some cassettes that had to be digitized by Dan McKinney down in Center Valley, and also broadcasting from 24 of the over 100 community radio programmers from those years.
Amazing.
You'll be able to access them two ways. You can use a download QR app, which you'll find on page one in the catalog, and access SoundCloud, or you can visit the Martin Art Gallery website at Muhlenberg College and here. And there is a link for each of the bands, the 17 bands, and then a separate link for the WMUH programmers' station IDs and program promos.
Wow. And we're talking, this is of 30 years ago.
Well, the focus is 1978 to 1988, mm-hmm. correct?
Yeah. Correct.
Yes. 88? Yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So almost 30 to 40 yeah. years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so it took some effort to reconnect with all the artists and see if they were still around and willing to be part of the show. Ray Barnes, a professor at Muhlenberg College, helped me curate the show and was very influential in bringing in certain artists and restoring certain art pieces. And so we had a great team. We had a really excellent team that helped us birth of this project, and it couldn't have been a better group of people to work with.
We met almost monthly for 18 months. Now, mind you, Lisa and I had been working on trying to find a venue and talking about it and really developing it, put pen to paper 6 months prior, approximately. So really, for Lisa and I, it's been a two-year labor of love. But our committee actually re-met with agendas, et cetera, every month for 18 months
wow.
to pull this together.
And we were really lucky to have John Lott, who's such a great graphic designer, put his time in to do the catalog.
Which is beautiful.
And we got community input for memories and articles for the catalog. And so this whole project really has been, again, a community effort, which we love because it was originally a community effort in the beginning to make all the creativity happen. So,
and we should mention, of course, that this whole project, which was curated and created by both of you, is a collaboration between Muhlenberg College Martin Art Gallery, the Baum School of Art, the Allentown Art Museum of the Lehigh Valley, and the Cigar Factory Alternative Gallery.
Yeah, right.
I want to especially thank Martin Art Gallery for providing the financing and funding for all of our print collateral, the production of it. The volunteer work from John Lott created our wonderful logo, but Martin Art Gallery is really responsible for the catalog, which will be something people can take back for them to refresh their memories again and again.
It's a beautiful, I mean, particularly the book, because there's a mix of memories, images. It's as well-rounded as I kind of that community felt, and very grassroots. We were talking about that a little bit before the show, too. Very DIY, ironically. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was. very collaborative and very accessible. And why downtown Allentown? I mean, why was Greg Weaver? Was it space? Was it the bark? Was it personalities? What was the magnet, do you think?
Well, that's why questions always, you're at risk of creating a fairy tale. But I think in Lisa's article, she describes the times very well. But Greg was really, as Jeff Gaiman said, he was like the Pied Piper. Mm-hmm. And then you just had people again that just, well, that's a great idea. Let's go do it.
I think the youth was connected to New York in a way. You know, people would come in and out of the city, and so they were aware of bigger cultural forces. There was also a lot of input. You know, MTV was starting. There was a lot of world music happening at that time. There was the punk movement, which was also very iconoclastic and do-it-yourself. And I think Allentown really still had a lot of richness, even though it was in the midst of the Rust Belt decline. There was still a lot of energy from the industry and the textiles, and the richness that really had created Allentown for many years still was bearing fruit within the youth of that time. And I think, you know, we still felt like we could do things, and we had potential, we had the energy, and we had the creativity and the smarts to do it, and there was no reason not to. It was... Mm-hmm. Who knows why all those things happen? You know, it's like the famous scenes in Paris or New York. Yeah. You know, they happen because amazing people got together.
And the opportunities for people at that point were, it seemed to me to be much greater. I mean, it was almost like that that Mickey Rooney movie. You know, like, hey, I got a barn. Let's go and do something. And it seems that the galleries and second lofts and second story lofts all became magically open. And that's where the artists went to do their work. Didn't have to worry about too much of the semantics of everything else, just worried about the art and created their art.
Well, that's true. I mean, I think New York at that time was kind of bankrupt, and I think Allentown was economically probably going through a lot of hard times. There was a lot of open, vacant, you know, apartments and houses for rent, and so we took advantage of those opportunities that were sort of born out of difficulty.
Let me quote arts writer Jeff Gaiman of the Icon magazine, and I quote, "A thriving cultural scene vanished a generation ago from downtown Allentown. Today's Center City is a thriving enterprise zone for new offices, restaurants, and apartments keyed to the PP&L Center, in the shadow, incidentally, of Greg Weaver's loft. The counterculture spirit remains in such enterprises as our own WDIY 88.1, launched in 1995, certainly by Cheryl and Lisa, and other WMUH leaders, as the Valley's first national public radio affiliate. The spirit continues," close quote. Gaiman writes in addition, "which doubles as a call for accessible, affordable art spaces in downtown Allentown," close quote. I most enthusiastically agree. We will be right back.
Attention beer lovers, WDIY's Homebrew Fest is back. featuring an afternoon of beer tasting and music with over 30 handcrafted beers from the Lehigh Valley's best homebrewers. Saturday, July 8th from 2 to 5 p.m. at the Ice House in Bethlehem. Discounted early bird tickets are available now for a limited time. Get your tickets today at WDIY.org. Cheers.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater, Bethlehem, presenting the Jacopa Punch Processional as part of the Cirque It Festival. This free performance is part three-ring circus, part rock concert, and part puppet show, July 14th through the 16th at 6:30 p.m. each evening on the South Bethlehem Greenway. For more information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
This is WDIY 88.1 Allentown, and you are tuned in to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and along with my wife and co-host, Kate Scuffle, we are chatting today with the creators, the curators, the organizers, great people to talk with about the past, Cheryl Hockney and Lisa Boss. Thank you.
So we were saying that we could talk about what went into the stories, the artists, the scene for ages. It's that rich. It's rich enough that there are several venues, several events. This goes on and on. Let's talk for a little bit with the audience, for the audience, about what one opening has already taken place. The Martin Gallery show has opened.
Yes, it's still open. Tuesday through Saturday?
The Martin Art Gallery is open Tuesday through Saturday from noon to 8 p.m. You'll enter off of 2 Street. The building, Big White Center for the Arts, you can't miss it. We have a big banner, larger than life, hanging down the side of the building for Vision Sound. And also in the Galleria area of the same building, you'll find the poster collection, the memorabilia, and how to access the sound.
Okay. And the Bomb School.
Bomb School will open Thursday, July 13th, mm-hmm. but the gala opening reception is the third Thursday, July 20th. From 6 to 8 p.m., and before that, we're having an artist talk right across the street at the Allentown Art Museum from 5 to 6 p.m., where you can meet and greet the artists and ask them questions and listen to their memories and get up close and personal with them. And we also have a concert.
Oh, do we have a concert? Everybody kept saying, oh, we should have these events, we should have a concert. And I said, I'm not organizing a concert. Those days are long gone. But luckily for all of us, Ronnie Rock Sable, who is the front man for the pop punk band, the Trendsetters, who lives in Virginia Beach, put together a fabulous lineup for Thursday, July 15th at the Alternative Gallery at 4th and Tillman Streets. So you'll hear Roman and the Herd, with members from the band The Vultures from the 1980s. Mm. You'll also hear former members of The Creatures. Of course, two of The Creatures members, Mark Smith and Mike Simtreski, have passed on. But some of those will come back, and it's called The Creatures' Shadow. And then Dave Gottes, who is the front man along with his brother Kevin Gottes. Dave will be coming from New York to do a Daddy Licks Unplugged with Friends of Daddy Licks. And then Ronnie Rock and the Trendsetters will take the stage along with JT John Terleski, formerly of the Original Sins, now of Brother JT. yours truly, Sally Satellite and Neil Heaver, will be emceeing. We have Donna McGavro, who is the doctor on WMUH and also on LVR in the 80s. She'll be spinning discs along with Neil, Max Fox from WDIY, and Ginny Wilson, a former programmer. So it is sure to be a great evening. Tickets will be available at the door, and the doors will open at 8. Please don't miss this. This is and the Alternative Gallery is a great place. There's some really great people there. Yep. This is who we're passing the baton to, everyone. You know, as we're now in our later years, these folks have really picked it up. They're doing what we were doing and more. What we were doing in the 80s in downtown, they're continuing at 4th and Tillman. So please come out and support and hear these bands, because it's incredible that Ronnie pulled this together all the way from Virginia Beach.
Wow, that's amazing.
And the Allentown Art Museum will not wrap it up, but the next venue panel discussion Thursday, July 20th, with Jeff Gaiman moderating?
Yes.
And who will be joining Jeff, or what will...
Let's see. We'll have Linda Cummings, Barnaby Rue, Ted Ormai, Ken Michael, Jet Ulan or Saracek. And is there anyone else I'm forgetting?
That's it.
Yeah, I think that's it. And so anyway, up close and personal, you'll get to really have some time face-to-face with the artists to talk and ask and and hear their stories, hear their personal stories. And then you can walk across the street and have a great reception at the Baum School. So
the work at the Baum School is more recent works by the artists that are still living, that are exhibiting over at Muhlenberg.
Oh, okay.
So if, that's the connection. So the venues, because of the space of the venues, they lent themselves well to have the 12 artists at Muhlenberg and
the artists.
Eight.
Yes, you're right. Jessica Leonard, we're including her works in because she passed away at the very end of last year. And her family was gracious enough to loan us some of her work. We felt that she was initially part of our idea to have her in the contemporary works show as well, so we kept her in it.
So while you'll see the works from the 1978 to 88 period at Muhlenberg, you'll have the opportunity now to see more recent works by those same artists, kind of catch up and see what they're up to these days at the Baum School.
Yeah.
And we're utilizing both galleries at the Baum School, the Rodale Family Gallery and the David Rodale Gallery.
I would like to mention this fabulous catalog that you have.
Again, we love it.
Yes, we do. And it's chock full of memories and pictures and things. I mean, I've looked at one of Ray DiCecco's pieces here that are in the catalog, and his work today is not dissimilar, but it has changed.
Mm-hmm. Sure, watching these artists grow and change. Well, Lisa, you were saying earlier before the show, too, I mean, there's a sense that, like, much like the catalog, is a moment of remembering and honoring and kind of holding this while we still can.
Absolutely.
You know, sharing it and having something to pass on.
Yeah, honoring the artist's work. You know, in certain countries like Japan, they have national treasures where they honor their artists as treasures of the nation. And I think we need to do sort of the same thing.
Here.
Recognize our local artists as treasures because they were local treasures. They created so much wealth and humor and beauty and excitement and... Yeah, that's what we're living for, right? We were not working.
You mentioned the catalog, George. So I know our listeners can't see this, but I'd like to visualize this. The front cover of the catalog is the logo and the branding for Vision Sound. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the back cover and you hold it to a mirror, it reflects the front. So again, it's looking back and then looking forward again.
Beautiful.
So
great.
That was John Lott's idea.
Yeah, good idea. Good idea.
And speaking of the catalog, make sure you visit the shows and get your copy because there were a little over 1,200 printed. And I happened to see Paul Nicholson from Martin Art Gallery Thursday evening last week, and he said it's unbelievable. He doesn't have too many boxes left out of
really.
Yeah. So. Most
They're
of the folks are thinking
shelves.
Like we are, that it's great to have.
Yeah,
and again, this is your opportunity because Lisa and I are not doing this again.
I was just going to say, you know, as artist Kate and I know how much effort and
people
struggle,
realize,
people don't realize how much it is to create something like it. It's not just let's do this
and then do it.
It takes a lot of planning. It took you over a year to deny
2 years.
It.
Two years.
To get this all together and your ideas blossom. And so we really need to thank you for doing that. And I'm wondering, maybe as an exclusive, you know, we could look back at the 50s and the 60s and the 70s for next year, or the 80s or 90s.
Or we could let the folks at the Alternative Gallery keep that baton and forge ahead.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yes, you're absolutely right. You're doing fabulous work, and we thank you very much for this. Was very exciting to see this happen, and I'm sure we're going to see some old friends in those exhibits and galleries and meet them, re-meet them again, revisit our friends from that period. I do want to say too, special thanks to Steve Aronson, our broadcast engineer, who on a daily routine manages to deal with our learning curve in broadcasting and has contributed his services here at WDIY for 15 years. Thank you, Uncle Stevie, for your care and your fortitude in dealing with the demands of live radio.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you again, Cheryl.
Oh, thank you, Lisa.
You're very welcome. Our pleasure. My pleasure.
Next up on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, at the movies, a review of a current film with Paul Willistein of the Press.
It's called Cars 3, But there are many more than three cars in Cars 3, which of course is named Cars 3 because it's the third in the Disney Pixar feature animation series about a rambunctious group of cars with anthropomorphic traits. Of course, this is not a stretch because many of us have given our chrome horses affectionate or not-so-affectionate male or female gender names. Cars 3, again, gives us cars and vehicles that are quite the characters, with cute and or spiffy or clunky bodies, personalities, and voices. The vehicle's suspensions and the tires animate like frisky puppies or barnyard animals. The grills function as mouths. Some zoom around the track or up and down the streets and roads. Others hobble along. The vehicles in Cars 3 include Lightning McQueen, a Corvette-like sports car voiced memorably by Owen Wilson, Cruz Ramirez, a sporty car voiced charmingly by Cristela Alonso, Smokey, voiced with a lot of inflection by Chris Cooper, Sterling, the villain, a futuristic Le Mans race car voiced by Nathan Fillion, Mater, a beat-up, rusting tow truck voiced humorously by Larry the Cable Guy. There's many other vehicles and as many other voices, including those by Armie Hammer, Paul Newman, Ryan Tom Magliazzi, Tony Shalhoub, Bonnie Hunt, Lea Delaria, and the race car drivers, Darrell Waltrip, Richard Petty, Junior Johnson, and Jeff Gordon. Cars 3 again takes us to the big race. That's basically the plot. What's best about Cars 3 are the highways and byways it travels on the way to the big race, including scenes in Radiator Springs, Lightning McQueen's hometown, a demolition derby race, and an abandoned track in Thomasville, Georgia, which is an old dirt track. The movie is directed by Brian Fee, who worked in the art department on Cars 2, WALL-E, and other Disney Pixar films. The detail in Cars 3 is amazing. The backgrounds, the settings, the landscapes, the racetracks are fascinating. The vehicles are animated superbly. Each has a distinctive image. Cars 3 was seen in 2D. Seeing the film in 3D is not necessary. Cars 3 is one of the few G-rated films and can be seen by all ages. Cars 3 is MPAA rated G. Cars 3 is preceded by the Pixar animation short Lost and Found. It features Olaf of the animation feature film Frozen. Opening June 30 are Despicable Me 3. Kyle Balda, Pierre Coffin, and Eric Guillon directs the voice talents of Jenny Slate, Kristen Wiig, Steve Carell, and Julie Andrews in the animation feature comedy. This time, Gru and his twin brother, Drew, team up for more mayhem. The House. Andrew J. Cohen directs Will Ferrell, Jeremy Renner, Nick Kroll, Allison Tolmain in the comedy about a father who starts an illegal casino in his basement after he and his wife squander their daughter's college fund. Baby Driver. Edgar Wright directs Ansel Elgort, Kevin Spacey, Lily James, and John Bernthal in the action crime thriller about a young getaway driver and a heist doomed to fail. Amityville: The Awakening. Frank Calfone directs Bella Thorne, Cameron Monaghan, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Jennifer Morrison in the horror thriller about a single mom and her three children who move into a haunted house, unaware of its bloody past. I'm Paul Willistein of the Lehigh Valley Press at the movies for WDIY.
Thank you for listening to Lehigh Valley Art Salon on WDIY Allentown, 88.1 FM and WDIY.org, serving the Lehigh Valley. We are the Lehigh Valley's community NPR station and your very own source for NPR news, public affairs, and a great mix of handpicked music. It's currently 78 degrees with a few clouds in the area. Overnight, the forecast is for mostly cloudy with low around 56. Tomorrow, Tuesday, chance of showers and thunderstorms later in the afternoon, partly sunny otherwise with a high near 76. Tuesday night, chance of showers and thunderstorms early, mostly clear otherwise with a low around 51. And your outlook now for Wednesday is sunny with a high near 77. Again, 78 degrees in the Lehigh Valley. Time is 6:30, and it's time to take charge of your life.
Good. Good evening, everyone. It's